Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
My name is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, a super duper awesome place. Roberta's is a very, 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 very proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. We're also super awesome. Thank you, Heritage.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome back to Roberta's.
Welcome back, Mike. It seems like we were just here an hour ago.
It's been a big day in Heritage Radio history today.
Yes.
A double dose of Mike and Judy.
Arts and seizures. I'm arts, that's seizures.
And we're here today with our guests Simon Rich and Farley Katz.
To celebrate the publication of their new book, The Married Kama Sutra. One thing I need to know, boys, are you guys married?
To each other or otherwise?
Farley was married.
That explains some of the tone.
And I was an observer.
Oh, really, Simon? How
sometimes
so?
It feels like I was also an observer in my own marriage.
I want to give just a little quick bio on the guys because they're both very accomplished. Simon has written for Saturday Night Live and The New Yorker, and his books include What in God's Name and The Last Girlfriend on Earth. And Farley is a staff cartoonist for The New Yorker and the author of Journal of a Schoolyard Bully. So these guys got CVs as long as my arm. Very glad to see you guys.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for having us. Really fun.
Hey, Farley, do you know our other, we have another friend of the Arts and Seizure show, Carolita Johnson. Are you friends with
her? Oh, yeah, she's great. She's another cartoonist at The New Yorker.
You are our second New Yorker cartoonist.
All right.
We've got to work on our third, the Catman.
The Catman's going to come. Well, this book is, after a fashion, sort of an extended New Yorker cartoon. I've never been married, you know, so I don't know this nightmare of which you speak, of which you describe, and what's been described as the world's least erotic sex manual, because, of course, my life being single is just, you know, orgy after orgy.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I go from girl to girl. It's like being on tour in Van Halen without the bad music.
Or the poon. Have you gotten an angry call from your ex-wife?
From her lawyers. They like to make a lot of phone calls. They can bill for all of them. Bill me for all of them.
A portion of the proceeds of this book actually go directly to Farley's ex-wife's lawyer.
The Farley Katz Divorce Fund.
You guys are breaking my heart. You're so young and so cynical.
Well, we think, you know, there's some hope, I think, within these pages.
There is some hope towards the end.
Yeah.
Towards the very, very end.
Yeah, there's at least some attempted eroticism towards the end.
They almost do it.
Almost.
Almost do it. Well, it's like same-sex marriage, right? That's the joke. After you get married, it's all the same sex.
Well, we think, there's room for a same-sex married Kama Sutra as well, or...
Yeah, I have a lot more bills to pay, so it would be good if we could sell that.
Oh, how long were you married for?
You know, a year plus, but felt, a little bit longer than that. a little bit longer.
I've been with the same guy for 9 years. We're not married. And I have to tell you, no, every day is the new erotic experience. Once you've, like, witnessed someone taking a dump and, like, you know, it's just nonstop doing it. So I think you're a little jaded, and that's not quite right.
Yeah, I'm blessed by having a girlfriend who is also a great homemaker and is, like, you know, wonderfully domestic. And you know, it's kind of a turn on. I gotta say, every time, forget about taking the dump. That we haven't gotten to that point yet. But every time I see her do the dishes, I'm ready to rock.
God.
The original Kama Sutra, though, that thing is really daunting, yeah. Even for single people.
Yes.
Having looked through those pages since I was a kid in bookstores, sneaking peeks at it, all it ever made me feel was terror. I mean, those are some...
You got legs behind the head, like all over the place. It's...
Yeah, requires a lot of flexibility and athleticism. And so I think really one of the main reasons we wanted to write this was set the bar a little bit lower.
Oh, boy.
More attainable.
Yeah.
More achievable.
The bar is so low, I'm afraid I'm going to trip over it. Well, Judy, you're both a pornographer and an eroticist and a great athlete. So have you actually...
Yeah.
So have you actually tried to do all the positions in the Kama Sutra?
No. No.
You didn't do it and blog about it?
No, no, no. I don't... No. I'm boring. I'm like vanilla... No, I've done the dishwasher thing in their book. I've done every position in their book.
Explain to the kids at home. The kids are all over 18. What exactly the dishwasher position in this book entails,
Simon?
Sure. Yeah, I can. I can read it. It's a position that that's illustrated in the book, and it goes when the man is loading the dishwasher and the woman must come over because he is loading it wrong. It is called the dishwasher position. And then there's a picture of two fully clothed married people standing over the dishwasher. And that's one of many positions you'll find.
Yeah, we did that one almost every day. That was...
This is autobiographical.
That was one of the good ones.
So sad.
I don't know.
I'm an eternal romantic, you know. I'm an optimist about these things. You know, like I always say, people talk about, you know, because I have been a bachelor for so long, and I would like... to be married and have like an ongoing, successful, mutually supportive adult relationship. And people say, "So, Mike, you're ready to settle down?" And I said, "No, I want to settle up." Because settling down. No, it's not a joke. I mean, seriously, because this idea of being with the same person to me should be opening up possibilities, not crashing, you know, down. It should be like, now everything is possible.
Yeah.
It removes a lot of the bullshit.
I think there's some positive.
Again, I'm an idealist.
Yeah. Like, well here's like an upbeat one. This
Joe, you got some music for us while we do a little reading of this book?
This is sort of a, you know, this is from page 12. When the toddler is at the grandmother's and the man and the woman have plans to go out, but decide instead to drug themselves with Ambien at 7:30 p.m. because all they truly crave is a sweet release of sleep, it is called the Waltz of the Sloths. So we felt that was, you know, sort of an upbeat thing. And then the picture is them enjoying the effects of Ambien.
You guys ever have Ambien sex?
Is that a thing?
It is a thing.
That's what Tiger Woods was taking Ambien.
Oh, you load up on it and then...
Well, I think his Ambien sex was sort of like Ambien eating or Ambien driving, where he's not conscious of it. But it's also a thing where you're using it as a recreational drug to... I mean, I like Ambien, but I see no recreational possibility to it whatsoever. I mean, it's got all the recreational possibilities of being hit in the head with a baseball bat. I mean, it's just like, dunk, and that's why I like it. It's a dummy pill. But apparently, kids your age, like you guys, youngsters, you know, find recreational purposes for all sorts of prescription drugs these days. And you take a tab of Ambien, and you're there, the giant black wave that overwhelms you. Doing it, and I don't know. This is what they tell me. Kids in Williamsburg, all the kids are doing it.
They're doing doing Ambien out there. Huh?
As a recreational drug.
Wow.
So says someone in their late 40s. We're probably completely wrong. Do you guys have kids?
No.
No,
not
okay.
That I know of.
Yeah.
Oh, that answer. I
don't. Just like Captain Kirk.
So you guys have... this is your first collaboration?
Well, you know, Simon and I have been... submitting stuff to the New Yorker for years, but this is the first thing that we'd done together that was accepted.
Yeah, believe it or not, we for 10 straight years, the two of us tried to get things into the magazine together, cartoons, and we actually brought with us we don't have the drawings, but we have some of the captions from some of our rejected...
Rejected New Yorker captions.
Yeah, we can read you some if that's all right.
Oh,
yeah.
Absolutely.
Cool.
Joe, cue the music.
So these are cartoons that Farley and I wrote and drew, dating back really till when we first met, when we were teenagers.
Yeah, sometimes like when we work alone, we're not doing the same project together, we, you know, can come up with more reasonable things to turn into the New Yorker, but it seems like whenever we get together, they're like... pretty vulgar. Pretty,
yeah, I don't know. And it's probably good that we're on the radio because these are some of these cartoons maybe wouldn't be appropriate for all audiences. But we'll just read the caption.
Oh, those fucking squares of the New Yorker.
Yeah, they don't.
The drawings are really something else.
But we'll just read the captions. This is the first one. I'll read the caption. That's not ice cream. And that one was rejected.
Another one we did was that's not yogurt.
Those drawings were actually.
If the next one is that's not cheese. You guys are getting out of here.
The next one is the next one is, and I understand in hindsight why the New Yorker did not accept this one. It was that's a lot of feces.
I actually thought that one was gonna. Was almost made it in. I think that made like second round cut.
But when that got cut, we decided we would try to, you know, get a little bit more into political satire because that's always a little bit more clever when you go political. And so we tried to do something a little more trenchant
So then we submitted this one, and again it's radio, so you can't see the image, but the caption is that Governor Romney or is that an Etch-a-Sketch? Oh man, feces everywhere.
Nice.
That one also rejected.
That is heartbreaking.
But eventually, after about a decade, we figured it out by putting clothes on the figures.
Yeah, and yeah. Taking out like some of the feces.
Most of it. And that's how we ended up with this one.
Judy, you're a longtime New Yorker reader, right?
Yes.
I find it such a slog lately, to be honest with you. It's one of the few magazines I do subscribe to, and I always like it. But honestly, this is exactly what that magazine needs. There's naked people and feces.
Yeah, I think their regular readers might be a little offended by the feces.
Well, it's time to shake up the squares a little bit. You know, I mean, seriously, do we really need like another like 50,000 word piece about like the Middle East peace process?
You know, and sometimes in the middle of those long pieces, they'll slip in just like whole paragraphs about feces because they know that
it's no one's really reading them.
Just to check to see if anyone's, you know.
Yeah. Also in the masthead, the circulation report, there's some pretty dirty jokes. They sort of bury right in there, you know, right under the ABC audit numbers.
How did you two meet? You said you grew up together, or you just met when you were teenagers, or?
Yeah. Well, actually, Simon and I have been friends for a long time, and then we didn't know where we were going to go to school, and then a good friend of ours actually passed away, and is by the name of Ivory, and. So then we took Ivory's ashes and we planted a marijuana plant and we smoked that marijuana plant.
Uh-huh.
And it, you know, made us like Ivory's ghost came and appeared to us and told us, you know, the information that we needed to pass our SAT tests. And so then we went off to Harvard together and things got a little interesting at Harvard.
Yeah, the ghost stayed with us and continued to give us advice, but the advice wasn't always socially... constructive.
Exactly. And then at some point, the dean was really giving us a hard time, and the Ivory's marijuana plant ran out, and then we were on our own. And to see how that turned out, perhaps you could rent the movie How High.
Which is based on our experience.
Yep.
It's a nicer story than sorting your dad's ashes, I guess, like Keith Richards did. That's a beautiful
story. And here you
story.
Are on the Arts and Seizure Show.
So I was looking at, Simon, I was looking at your Wikipedia bio thing, because I do a lot of research here. I like that you're known for being the second youngest writer for Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
That's so weird. Like, after there's the youngest...
After what? Say it again.
After there's the youngest. Like, is there a third youngest?
Maybe. Yeah. I'm not sure if I even was a second. I'm not sure if that's accurate or not. But I've got a feeling there's probably. I mean, that show's been on for 100 years. There's probably like chimney sweeps he wrote for that show. Right. You know, when they were like 12 years old. So
during the Eddie Murphy years. Or something.
Yeah, Eddie Murphy was like a teenager, I think, when he was writing for that show. So.
So how did you guys? How do you guys generally work? Do the pictures come first? Words?
I have a caption. You tell me the picture.
Okay.
Okay. Here's the caption. There's something you don't see every day.
Hmm. That's a really good. Yeah. I mean, my mind just goes to feces.
Yeah.
But I don't know. What would you say?
I would say a man pointing, and it's not one feces, but two, and he's pointing at both the feces.
Or maybe a curiously shaped feces.
Yeah.
Now we're talking.
The face of Jesus.
This is really turning into quite the comedy workshop here.
Definitely.
Hey, Joe, why don't we take a break? Joe, can you spin that great big up song we heard earlier today? Is that a yes, Joe, King of the Engineers?
I'm working on it. I'm nervous.
This is the Arts and Seizure Show, broadcasting live from Roberta's here in Bushwick on the Heritage Radio Network with Simon and Farley. This is good. We're going to come back. We're gonna collaborate, and then we're going to take over the New Yorker.
Like what you hear so far? Support the network and become a member. Membership helps us bring you the best food radio in the world and gives you access to thousands of dollars in discounts at the sustainably minded businesses that support us. To become a member, visit heritageradionetwork.org today.
So much, Joe, the rock star engineer, back from tour.
The big ups. You sound a lot like a young Lou Reed there, Joe. I'm telling you.
Oh my!
Don't take the heroin, Joe.
I trust me.
Stay away from the smack, Joe.
I will.
So Farley and Simon have a couple of book thingy signings coming up. Why don't you tell us about what you've got going on?
Yeah, this Monday the 4th. Is that right?
Yeah.
We will be at Book Court in Brooklyn at 7 p.m. to do a reading and signing, so just come out.
And we're going
to
be showing some slides of some of our favorite rejected New Yorker cartoons.
Now, these are legit rejected cartoons, ones that you've submitted with actually expecting them or hoping that they might be accepted.
Yeah, these are our true best efforts, and you can see them and then try to deduce why. Maybe they didn't all make the cut.
So what is the process, actually? If I had a cartoon idea, could I just call up, hello, New Yorker, this is Mike from Arts and Seizures, and send them my fantastic version of There's Something You Never See
Every Day? That's totally the way publishing works.
Yeah. Who do I gotta know? Who do I gotta fuck?
David,
he's sitting right here. This guy.
My pants are off for a reason. Let's go. Let's get wild.
I thought you would have taken the hint by now.
Yeah.
Duh.
No, you can just go. You can just send them into New Yorker. You can just address them to the New Yorker, mail in your cartoons. I think you need to draw them as well. Just send them in.
That is never going to happen.
It's not in this lifetime. No way. Cold calling the New Yorker. I don't see it somehow.
Did you always want to be a cartoonist for the New Yorker, or were you more into Superman and stuff growing up?
It was either cartoonist or superhero.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
No.
Well, it's so urbane, so genteel, the New Yorker.
Yeah,
so
I mean,
civilized.
No, I always, those are, I've always enjoyed those cartoons, and I, at some point, Simon and I, we run out of feces cartoons, and so that's, when we can do things that they might accept.
Surely must you be able to sell those feces cartoons elsewhere.
We've tried. A lot of our rejected New Yorker cartoons were rejected also by other magazines.
So these are multi-rejects.
Mad Magazine, which is world-renowned for its display of feces cartoons, they don't accept them anymore.
What about Cracked?
Cracked
is no longer a magazine.
It's now online, but we've both contributed to Mad, right? You got some cartoons in there, yeah. But I used to write for Mad Magazine back in college, but the ones we did together again never worked out. I think a lot of collaborators, when they join forces, it's like they're greater than the sum of their parts, and I think for us, it's often you know, it's whatever the opposite of that is. Less than the sum.
Quartered instead of double.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly, yeah.
Much like Patrick Martins and I, where we came in both ready to rock and ended up with something that kind of demeaned both of us.
So you come from a very a newsy family. Your dad's Frank Rich. Your stepmom works for the Times too. And did you always did
you've got ink running in your veins?
Was this the thing? Did you ever just want to be like a motocross driver or a garbage man or anything? Or did you always know you'd
stripper?
Write?
Well, I think you know everybody dreams of being a motocross something. Yeah, but yeah, I don't know. I guess my big hope is that nobody tuning in right now was expecting Frank Rich and ended up with the Married Kama Sutra, because that would be, you know, that would be a rough afternoon if you're going in expecting trenchant political commentary and you end up with the dishwasher position. So my apologies to anybody who's accidentally tuning in.
And what do your folks think about this this somewhat less than romantic sex novel that you guys have perpetrated?
You
show your parents your work, right?
Yeah,
I mean, I was a pornographer. My parents were not very fucking happy.
Were you a pornographer?
I think at some point I still am. Yes, I am a pornographer. I was the editor-in-chief of Screw Magazine, and I've written for Hustler. I've written enough Penthouse letters to actually put a down payment on an apartment. That's and great. Judy, too, slung the filth.
That's so cool.
Insert tab A into slot B.
Back when porn writing used to pay.
Wow, and so this is sort of like...
These microphones are all sort of dongish. I mean, these look like
your book is what we aspire to. This is successful. It's a legitimate publisher. Listen, I mean, it's got this quality from top to bottom. We aspire to this. We envy you.
Coming out right in time for Christmas too. I'm surprised they didn't wait till Valentine's Day, which is also covered in the book.
our hope is that you know it's we're trying to break into the wedding gift market, but we're also trying to corner the divorce gift market, which we think is untapped.
Yeah, well, they're having divorce parties now. I mean, there's a divorce section of Huffington Post. I mean, you guys are on it.
I think we're ahead of the curve there.
Yeah.
The divorce section. These are gifts that you give to the person you've just divorced or give to your friend who got divorced to celebrate that they got away from.
Your friend who dumped that loser who finally wised up.
Yeah.
Ditched that bitch. Yeah.
What's great about this book... is that there's very little text in it. So you can say over the weekend, like, if somebody's like, what do you do over the weekend? You can say, I read a book. And people will assume you're very intelligent for having read, you know, the entirety of a book.
I gotta say, that's what I look for in a book, is little text, big pictures.
Yeah.
I'm not very bright. It's just the way it is. Fucking internet ruined everything. I can't focus for more than 1 second on anything.
Oh, we're the same way.
Dostoevsky, David Foster Wallace, fuck that. Who's got time for that nonsense? Never mind that 50,000 word piece on peace in the Middle East. You know?
I'm having a blank moment. Yeah,
a blank moment. I'm stymied by the cynicism of these young people. Now, I'm the child of divorced parents. Okay, and my parents are very well. My father passed away, but up until the end, they were very bitter. You couldn't mention the other's name without like getting a dirty look. You know, and they raised three actually fairly responsible, successful children, but the bitterness just permeated everything. And I'm fairly optimistic, and my brother. So I've sort of overcompensated the other direction by doting and showering love and other wives and children. So I see this. I see something very cynical. I see you boys and I just want to cry.
Maybe you should just cuddle them.
It breaks my fucking heart. Can we have a group hug? Can we do that on the show?
No. Can we do it?
We had kittens on this fucking show last week, Judy.
We're group hugging right now. It's radio. You could say they're doing everything. Well, I wish Paul
you're squeezing. You're squeezing too hard.
But are your parents still together?
They are. That they're both attorneys, and you know, this book actually led me to have a lot of time one-on-one with a group of attorneys, my ex-wife's attorneys, and so it feels like I'm even closer to them. That's nice.
Did your parents handle your divorce?
No, you can't. Yeah. There's a
It's like a doctor operated.
Exactly. You have to get your own expensive lawyers who won't do anything for free, and they charge you, and your ex-wife's attorneys charge you. And
you'd think after just a year or two, you'd get like a divorce discount, like how much could be involved?
Well, they got like a frequent flyer miles.
Well, just like, you know, a 20-year marriage should take longer to disengage from than a...
Well, I'm a cartoonist, so, you know, my vast cartoon fortune.
I know many cartoonists.
Yeah.
The cat's estate.
Sam, what about you? Is there a special someone in your life that you're looking forward to marrying and divorcing?
Oh, you know, right now my main goal is just to focus on other people's, other friends' relationships and try to exploit them, you know, to financial end. So,
well, I'm sure you'd be sitting on top of a pile of gold after the world's least erotic sex manual comes up. What does your dad think about this?
Oh God, I shiver to think what he must think about it. I think I don't know.
I'm sure your parents are just happy you're making a living and not living off that.
That's what my parents said when
exactly,
I was
right.
Selling the most pernicious filth ever foisted upon humankind when I was writing those porn books. Like, I'm just happy he's employed.
Yeah, I think that's really valid. I mean, you know, anything to not have to live inside their living room, I think it probably makes them happy.
So what's next? You guys are obviously going to promote this book, do some tours, but you're writing for television and movies. You have some stuff coming up?
Yeah, I've got a pilot going. I my last book before this was called The Last Girlfriend on Earth, and it was a collection of dating stories, which you know, I guess the characters are a little bit younger than the ones in the Married Kama Sutra, but we're doing a pilot for FX based on that, and hoping for good things.
Simon, yeah. I'll have you know you're speaking right now to Judy McGuire, one of the foremost dating and relationship advice columnists in the history of American
letters. Nobody's ever heard of.
Date it's girl! Fun.
What's your favorite type of stuff to answer questions about?
Let me see. Mostly, like, the really satisfying ones are, how can I get laid from men? Because it's so easy. I've actually had thank you notes from this, like, don't sleep on a futon. Invest in a bed.
Uh-huh.
Brush your teeth regularly. Go to the dentist. You know, wash. I had a guy thank me. He hadn't had sex in like 5 years, and I wrote this detailed list, and that was satisfying. It like
that's great.
All you had to do was wash the parts.
The bed and stuff too. The bed.
Farley, do you need a pen? Do you want to take notes?
The bed is very important.
I just have a transcript.
The non-futon.
Yeah.
Because when a guy sleeps on a futon, I did date someone who used like rolled up sweaters as a pillow and stuff. Like, sheets are really important.
Yeah, when I was in college, when I was 19 or 20, I lived in a roommate situation, and the living room became so filthy that at a certain point we decided not to try to clean it anymore because it was just too daunting, and instead we would get the local free newspaper and just paper the floor repeatedly.
Oh my God.
As if we were animals inside of a cage.
Avant-gardist. You say animal, I say avant-garde.
Well, some women might want to pretend that they're hamsters.
That didn't help us dating wise, but it really made it way easier because every week when the newspaper came out, we would just freshly paper the
room.
Would you
throw out the old papers?
No, just paper.
Oh, just over.
Put it over. Just
so
keep putting it over.
So probably got nice and cushiony after a while.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, unfortunately, with the decline of the newspaper industry, that's no longer an option for today's young
kids
men.
Today,
I don't know how they're going to paper their
collateral damage due to
t-shirts.
The death of print media.
I know.
Who would have expected that to happen? That print media dies and these guys lost their interior design program.
Exactly.
Shit.
You know, I'll tell you what. I had a book for you. Judy McGuire has got more dating horror stories than any person I know, and I could see that as a richly illustrated book.
I know, I'm actually rewriting the story that I've made my bones on for so many years, the guy who crapped himself in my bed. I'm writing yet another version of that for a website I'm writing.
IMAX 3D, that's what I'm looking forward to.
Were you not to pry, but were you in the bed when he crapped it?
I was about to get in the bed. I was all gussied up, came into the bedroom, and he was passed out on his belly with shit pouring out of his boxers.
So you saw it in progress?
Or immediately after.
Immediately after. Gotcha. Yeah.
And that's it. That's a New Yorker cartoon waiting to happen.
Yeah. I think so. Or a cover. Why not a cover?
A cover. That's fantastic. Well, I'll tell you what, Simon Farley, this is actually a very, very funny book, The World's Least Erotic Sex Manual, The Married Kama Sutra. We're glad to have you guys on the Arts and Seizure Show.
Book Court tomorrow.
Book Court in Brooklyn tomorrow. It's a great place. You'll have a good time there.
Barnes & Noble, Upper East Side.
Yep, on Wednesday the 6th.
Where?
At 7 p.m.
Okay.
And where can we find you guys on the internet?
MarriedKamaSutra.com.
Thanks so much for coming.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank
Super
you guys.
Fun.
All right, so for Judy McGuire, I'm Mike Edison, and Joe, the King of Engineers. We'll see you guys next week. We've got our friend Mike Albo coming by, Arts and Seizures. See ya.
Thanks for listening to this program on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website,
or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Awele, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.